assistance came from David Klayman, Greta Cohn, Doug George, and Ursula Rudenberg. Music you've heard included Bag Search, Blasted, Happy Time, a.k.a. The Clam, Gdesibre, and Push It. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at Ursula, U-R-S-U-L-A, at Pacifica.org. That's U-R-S-U-L-A, at Pacifica.org.
Artists Against Apartheid, the 7th edition. Sunday, April 12th, La Sala Rosa. As part of the ongoing series, Uniting Artists in Montreal Against Israeli Apartheid. With performances from the improvisational duo of Laurie Friedman and Malcolm Goldstein. Advar, an Iranian musical duo. Bax, featuring saxophone from Claude Miru, poet Kai Kello, songs from Molly Sweeney. That's Sunday, April 12th at La Sala Rosa, 4848 Saint Laurent, $5 to $10. An event hosted by Tadamon Montreal, tadamon.ca. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Imperial Popolo, blue skies turn black, and CKUT present Mount Erie and Weird Visions. Friday, April 10th at Il Motore, 179 Jean Talon West. Phil Elverum is a singular voice in the American underground musical movement. Based in Anacortes in the state of Washington, he's marked many a life through his confessionals as the Microphones and now as Mount Erie. Catch him in this one-off gig in Montreal. No other city has him. Opening up the evening is Toronto's spooky troubadour, Weird Visions. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Production Nuit d'Afrique presents the Nigerian pop star Yemi Alade for an exceptional concert in Montreal. With her powerful voice and energetic performances, Yemi Alade is the new queen of Afrobeat. Don't miss her spectacular concert Thursday, November 10th at the M. Toulouse. Tickets on sale now. For more info, visit Production Nuit d'Afrique.
Caribbean Food Factory is available for all your special occasions. Come get a taste of authentic Jamaican cuisine prepared by none other than Montreal's top chef, Lloydie. You can also come sample our homemade natural juices. You can pick up, you can dine in, or you can also have it delivered directly to your home by Skip the Dishes or Uber Eats. We also offer catering and hall rentals for all your special occasions. Caribbean Food Factory, 5311 de Maisonneuve West on the corner of the Carrick. You can link us 514-481-2444 by email at foodfactorycaribbean@gmail.com.
We're back after having listened to the incredible Forak Emenka by the Chaotic Insurrection Ensemble, and we were just talking about how much we love that song because it gets faster and faster and faster, and also because Veronica and I both play the tuba, and sometimes Veronica plays the bass drum, and we have the best job of trying to speed up the entire band until they can't play anymore, and it's a really good time. So there we have it. We just listened. It's now about 4:07. You're still listening to CKUT 90.3, and last hour we listened to a documentary by the Hungry March Band. And coming up in this hour, we're going to play some more great music. There may be a tuba duet. Plus, we have the super exciting surprise that we referred to in the last hour, which I'm going to save for a moment later. And also, we're going to talk to Dan a little bit about musical cultural appropriation. But before that, I guess we should talk about the thing we just listened to and what we thought about it. Does anybody want to say anything about that?
That was the first time I ever heard that documentary, and I actually don't know the Hungry March Band very well, but I really liked it. I liked especially the part where they were talking about fun and what happened to fun and how street music can remind people that spontaneous, amazing, really creative things can happen, and life doesn't have to go on in the same boring way all the time. Things can interrupt it in a really good way. And that's my favorite part about being in the marching band.
Yeah, that's really good. That's why I like to be in the marching band, too, because we get to do really ridiculous and fun things. Like, for example, not that long ago, we overtook the metro and terrified some people on the metro. And then before that, we had overtaken the elevators in downtown. That was also really fun and terrified some business people. And we've done other funny things, so there you go.
We've been to the airport at around 6 a.m. also, which was a lot of fun also.
Yeah, that was good. Even the Canadian Border Services Agency were happy to see us, which was really shocking. And it was very hard not to smile at them when we walked by.
I really liked in that documentary the part about how they started and how each member came in, because it really shows that anyone, anywhere can really start whichever marching band they want. Mm-hmm. At whatever time. So that's pretty good. And I was actually wondering, like, I don't even know how you guys got in the band. Kathy, how did you get in the marching band?
Well, I hate to bust you, but you're totally lying right now, because you were the one who asked me to join the band. But I appreciated that little theatrical piece of radio. But it was, I remember, I can't remember, we were at your cabin or so. We were at your, I don't know, we were somewhere in the woods. I'm not sure. There was a lot of fire involved and trees. And then you asked me what instrument I played, and I said I played the tuba, and you just lost it. And you said I should totally join the band because you guys wanted a tuba player. Because at that time there was no tuba player. There was just one trombone player. And then I joined, and then it was extremely funny because I didn't have a tuba, but I still kept going to band practice with nothing.
You had a garbage can, no?
Yeah, for a while I was playing the garbage can, but I always knew I was not meant to be a garbage can player. I was meant to be a tuba player. And so it took many months before finally somebody hunted down a tuba underneath Morgan's bed, actually, which is the tuba that's right here that you heard earlier. And it was amazing. I went from being a tubaless tuba player to having an instrument, and it was a wonderful moment in my life.
I joined the marching band relatively recently. I guess it was last summer or spring, and I was filled with the joy of knowing that summer was coming, and I was excited about everything in the world that was possible to be excited about. And my next door neighbor, Anthea, I saw her walking around in the backyard with this gigantic, hilarious-looking drum. And she was playing it and practicing on it all the time, and I really enjoyed it. And I finally saw her playing with the marching band at the Anarchist Book Fair last spring, and she was about to leave to go back to Australia. So the giant bass drum was passed down to me. And that's when I started in the marching band, and it's truly been the most amazing experience, like ongoing joy for like the past year. So it was a great opportunity in my life.
Nice. I guess I joined the band one day. I was cooking for a demo, and in the room next door there was a radical dance troupe practicing, and my friend Teresa came in with her trumpet, and I asked why she had it at school, why she brought it to the kitchen, and she had it because she was going to play with Inner Shumar, she was at the time, in this anti-war demo. And it never occurred to me that something as fantastic as a band that played at demos could exist. So I went home and got my drum, and I hadn't been playing drums for a couple years at that point. But I brought my drum, and we all met at the Frigo and went to the demo in the pouring rain. And it was great. And it was the start of a long love affair with marching bands.
And what about you, Rochelle? How did you start?
Oh, God. It's so long ago. I remember being bored at demos and at events because it was so serious. And although the causes were serious, I didn't think we... I was not feeling comfortable being that serious. And then a few of other people around me felt the same way. So I just responded to the email Bronwyn sent and saying, like, let's start a marching band. I actually started through Solidarity Across Border for specifically a demo for them. And then we started playing first at Cuperg, if I remember correctly. But that just felt... Cuperg Concordia, that just felt a bit too invasive. So then we decided to go invade the Frigo Vert for a bit. And then at some point we got kicked out of there also, yeah. Or we kicked ourselves out. And yeah, so that's how I started. And it was basically to rebond with instruments because I was so scared of them for the past 10 years. I couldn't even think of playing an instrument. And then I decided that I wanted to get over that fear.
That's great. So there we have it. And now we play at DIRA and also at the Independent Media Center, those two places. So we owe them a big thanks or whatever because they put up with us and our ridiculous ways. And that's wonderful to know about. Yeah. So is there anything else we were going to say about that documentary? Oh, yeah. We were going to talk about something involving our mission statement and how that came to be. Because it's amazing when you have all these random people coming together trying to decide collectively via consensus what they're doing. And that's extremely hard. And so I don't know. I can't really remember the meeting at which we came up with a consensus decision about the mission statement because it was probably a very long meeting. But does anyone have any memory, firsthand memory of how that happened?
It was one of our first really long meetings, I think, because we all really like playing music, and we all don't really like meetings. But that one was a fun one, and there were even games. But it lasted 7 hours, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And everybody was exhausted at the end. So we had taken all the information of what we wanted the band to be and then shipped it to two people, one of them who wasn't even at the meeting, Maggie. And then they just drafted something, and it was just wonderful. Do you want to...
Well, we took the notes from the meeting and we sort of wrote them out into something coherent. And then there was a long period of emailing back and forth with different people of the band and ironing out the exact little wordings until we have the mission statement that we have now.
And if you want to read the actual, pragmatic or practical or real, some people might say, mission statement, you could go to the website, which is chaoticinsurrectionensemble.org. But for your listening pleasure, we have a new exciting interpretation of the mission statement, which we are going to give to you now. And I really hope you enjoy it, and it's going to be amazing. And to play this exciting new thing, we're going to listen to 8 1/2. Here we go. So just be ready. Hold on to your hats.
Activist. discussions of our band.
We all pray.
We support
community building.
We play.
We foster an artistic
costume.
French, français, English, anglais.
Nous
soutenons la libre circulation de personnes. Nous
considering our choices.
Nous posons d'autres formes. Merci beaucoup. Impérialiste, colonialiste, pour parler aux communications. Travaillons.
Individual struggle.
Dans la musique. Dans la vie. Nos répertoires. Composés.
Political movements.
Nous cherchons.
All of the radical and domination.
Nous célébrons la résistance. D'une manière.
Thank you.
Hi there, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to CKUT 90.3. This is the Montreal Sessions with the Chaotic Insurrection Ensemble. And today in studio with us, we have Dan. And we are going to talk a little bit about cultural appropriation. So do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so cultural appropriation is it's a manifestation of white supremacy in that, examples. White people in dreadlocks, white people rapping, white people performing culture that isn't theirs. Just to start off is that sometimes getting into these conversations, people A, get defensive, or B, assume that I know exactly what I'm talking about and that the discussion is completely black and white, or like yes or no, or like good or bad, as though you can just like point to something and it's yes, fine, or no, unethical. But it's not like that. It's vague, it's pretty gray, and it requires lots and lots of discussion. So talk about racism with your friends, because that's the only way you're going to figure out what it actually means. Now, cultural appropriation is basically, yeah, so it's when, broadly, it's when a person from one culture or one status in life performs the culture of somebody else. And academics will say that it works both ways, that as well as whites can perform the culture of the cultures of people of color, people of color can also perform white culture, whatever that is. But I feel like it's more beneficial, whatever, to talk about the white theft, because it's actually part of a historical process of stealing bodies, of stealing land, of stealing lives, of stealing territory and language and history and culture. And so that's where the real violence comes in, is when this theft of culture is coupled with political power, with legal tradition, with white supremacy, with global domination. And so this theft coupled with white supremacy makes cultural appropriation so dangerous, because it contributes to the erasing of culture, the diluting of cultures, and the actual theft of culture, wherein something like dreadlocks, which are a very specific cultural tradition that white people don't know anything about, but get worn by white people all the time as a fashion statement, or as like a statement of counterculture, or you don't want to take care of your hair or whatever. Like, I get it, right? Like, it's it's complex. But I would argue that that something like that is dangerous, because the actual meaning of dreadlocks gets lost and diluted and stolen, and so their significance becomes erased, to the point where dreadlocks no longer mean this very specific thing, but they become just a vague hairstyle with no importance, or not no importance, but with a disintegrating importance. And I know the show is primarily about music, so if you do another really good example, obviously, is this song "Hound Dog," which was popularized by Elvis Presley, but was originally written and performed by the artist Big Mama Thornton long before he ever was on what was that show? I don't know. Ever popularized. Exactly.
That's where they couldn't show his bottom half of his body, because he was dancing in a crazy way. Not in a crazy way, but they interpreted it to be a crazy way at that time.
Too sensual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Partly because he was dancing in a style that people felt was, like, at that time, you know, African-American or whatever, and they felt that that was really, like, awful to put on TV. And then it's so ironic because his appropriation of that culture or of that style of dancing and also of that way of singing then made him, like, a gajillion dollars because he became extremely famous. And, you know, there's, like, Graceland. People can go there and visit it or whatever. And it's interesting because the people who originally performed the music that he performed don't have any money, or they've passed away and been mostly forgotten by history. So I guess we should play now. This is the example by Big Mama Thornton. Is that mm-hmm. her name? This is the original Hound Dog. And we'll play this. And then we'll come back. So get ready. This is Hound Dog by Big Mama Thornton.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. We're snooping around the door. Ain't nothing but a hound dog. We're snooping around the door. You can wire your tail, but I ain't gonna be a you no more. Told me my heart, man. I can see it through.
Welcome back. That was Hound Dog by Big Mama Thornton. And we were just talking about how interesting it is, all the different layers of ownership of songs or whatever, because it's really unclear who exactly wrote that song. Like, it wasn't Big Mama Thornton herself necessarily. It was somebody else. But it's all a very interesting interesting thing. Was there anything you wanted to say about that song in particular?
Well, like, the writing aside is that if you go back and watch Big Mama Thornton performing it, Elvis got his moves from her. Elvis got that snarl from her. He basically stole her act. Mm-hmm. So, like, writing aside, he obviously was, like he was popular for whitening gospel music and blues and rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And so, like, as a specific example, it's pretty, like, solid, but just as part of the larger phenomena of the theft of rock and roll, of jazz, of blues, of ska, of punk, of house music. It's like endemic. And It's also just interesting to note that lots of these artists, like Robert Johnson, is another classic example of a black artist who was seminal and brilliant, but would be ripped off by his white counterparts all the time, and like Crossroads by Eric Clapton. Mm-hmm. And so these white artists become super popular, and what are these poor artists going to do? They don't have the money, they don't have the white establishment backing them up, mm-hmm. and so they don't have the resources to fight for the claims to their music, and so. So it's not just the case of Eric Clapton or Elvis or Vanilla Ice being bad people. It's that they're bad artists who also have a power establishment, an international power establishment, backing them up. And so it's not just these are bad people. It's that these are systems of oppression that enable this theft to happen over and over and over again. And so the important thing that the white people can do is engage in this process of decolonization, which is not just something that it's not just like a political process. It's a thing where white people have to deal with our own heads and deal with the fact that colonization is an ongoing process, and that we can either be engage in that theft and in that violence, or we can do our damnedest to recognize it and stop it. And just to say is that something that often gets in the way of this is white guilt, where people will just focus so much on what they've done in the past or all of the wrong in the world and not want to deal with it. But your guilt doesn't do anything. Your guilt just really perpetuates this process of centering yourself at the world and being and making. Maybe this is just getting too theoretical. So I'm here as part of the St. Emily Skillshare, and so I'm just going to plug us for a second. Is that you can check out our website, St. Emily, STEEMILIE Skillshare.com. You probably just Google Skillshare and you'll find us. But it's like a community center and art space in St. Henry, and we have a queer and anti-racist mandate, and we would love it for folks to come by and check it out, use our space, and let's talk about racism, because it's important and fun. Oh, well, racism isn't fun, but it's fun to talk about it.
Okay, thank you very much. And it's amazing because it's not an isolated incident, the cultural appropriation, like you were saying. There's so many. When you think of the entire establishment of rock and roll, for example, the Rolling Stones, when they were back in Britain and they were first playing music, they played a lot of music by black artists from the southern United States. And there's so much. When you listen to the roots of so many bands, you realize that it's not really in their own tradition whatsoever, especially Led Zeppelin as well. Many of the songs by Led Zeppelin are these kind of older gospel and folk and blues tunes that were written in the 1920s. It's interesting with Led Zeppelin's an interesting example because they didn't necessarily mimic exactly what those songs are about. They added their own element to it. And you can see it continuing throughout the course of history. For an example, I don't know if you guys know Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, but she's such an amazing artist. But of course, she's not nearly famous as that woman whose name I now forget, but she's
Amy Winehouse?
Yes, Amy Winehouse. That woman is so famous and so rich. And then you see Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, who is just almost her contemporary, even though Sharon Jones is a much older woman who started playing music in the 1960s. But it's she doesn't get the fame or the fortune. And Amy Winehouse walks away. She's on the cover of all the People magazines and all those things. So it's all very interesting, and it's still happening. It's not just a isolated thing, but it's the structure of, I would say, popular culture of what we're seeing is that kind of cultural appropriation throughout everything. And of course, in the marching band, because we're a marching band, we play music from all over the world. So we also struggle and think about this concept of what does it mean to be a band based in Montreal that's playing music, maybe some Roma music or music from the southern states.
And I think we wanted to talk a little bit about Ederlezi, which is the song that we used to play, although there was always mixed reviews as to whether we played it very well. But we did used to play it, and then now we don't play it because we're not really sure if we want to play it, or it's because of a lot of confusing factors. But maybe, Maggie, did you want to talk a little bit about,
sure,
about what that was all about?
Well, I guess about a year ago, we decided to talk amongst ourselves about how cultural appropriation applied to us, like both in terms of the repertoire that we played and how we presented ourselves as a band. So the first thing that we did was we went and researched the histories of the songs we played and also like the composers and arrangements that we used when we learned the songs. So in the case of Ederlezi, the history of the song was pretty complicated because it exists throughout the Balkans and Eastern Europe, and it has a different significance in every country. But for us, what was sort of key was that the arrangement that we play and that most people who aren't Roma play is by this person, Goran Bregovic, who is probably one of the most famous brass musicians in the world. And he isn't Roma, but he has used a lot of traditional Romani songs. So he has basically stolen their music and become rich and famous off of it. So we never really reached a decision on how we felt about Ederlezi. We talked about it a lot, and we talked about cultural appropriation a lot, and I think we got a little burned out by that discussion. And we've put it on hold for a bit, so right now we're not playing Ederlezi, but I think we still have a lot of thinking to do about that song and about some of the other songs we play too.
Yeah, so maybe we'll just now we'll play Ederlezi so you can listen to the song that we don't play at the moment, and then we'll come back. But thank you so much, Daniel, for coming in, and this is Ederlezi. So that was Ederlezi. And now we're going to play a song. What song are we going to play now, Veronica?
Well, I have actually two pretty amazing songs, and they're both really good examples of reclaiming public space in totally different ways. Both pretty spontaneous ways, but one involving sort of creating your own music out of no instruments and one with instruments. So, actually, there is an introduction in the beginning of both of these songs if you wanted to just play them.
Great. Okay, so that's it. We're going to listen to these songs. Here we go.
Selection 14, Postal Workers Canceling Stamps at the University of Ghana Post Office. Selection 15, High Life Music by the Nyakrom Brass Band. Thank you.
Playing A Las Bericadas, which is the song that's coming up next. Bye!
Thank you.
Hey there. So we're just going to say goodbye one more time from the Chaotic Insurrection Ensemble.
Bye.
Bye.
And we'll be coming back for the next 3 weeks between 3 and 5. Someone from the Fanfare Pour Pour may be coming to visit us. Also, La Maison de la Ville Volte. Also...
The FM band is from 88 megahertz up to 108.
You've got this frequency. We're going to call you CKUP. You've got this frequency, 98.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the moon and it looks like they pick up CKUP, clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUP, CKUP, CKUP. CKUP is on the air.
Yo, check this out. This is Flavor Flav, and you listening to C. Yo, check 1-2. This is Flavor Flav, Public Enemy. And you listening to K. Yo, check 1-2. This is Flavor Flav, Public Enemy. And you listening to CKUT in the place to be from the Bronx to COP.
Is Democracy Now.
It is not just affirmative action that is under consideration today. It is the trajectory of our future as a democracy.
The Supreme Court's conservative majority appears set to end affirmative action in college admissions. We'll hear excerpts from Monday's oral arguments and get response. Then New York has agreed to pay a total of $36 million to settle lawsuits on behalf of two men wrongly convicted and jailed for decades for assassinating Malcolm X in 1965.
But people know I didn't do it. Nobody ever thought I did it. Just white people. Our people never thought I did it.